Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of the Sight Screen Cricket Journal podcast. I'm your host, Tohid Qureshi, and today, really pleased to be introducing someone all the way over from Australia. It's Paul Dennett. He's a cricket commentator, broadcaster, and also host of the Cricket Daily podcast and the Cricket Unfiltered podcast as well. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Tohid. Nice to be here.
Great to have you on. Let's get straight into it. I think obviously the last kind of week or so have been quite momentous, certainly for Bangladesh cricket. The first time they've beaten Australia in a series in any format. Indeed, actually, if you look back at the times they've beaten Australia, it really is few and far between. The only time they've beaten the Aussies in ODIs was back in 2005, if you can remember that.
Remember
that
it well.
Game where Andrew Symons went a bit AWOL the night before in Cardiff. Yeah. Famous win there just before the famous Ashes summer. That England ended up winning back in 05. So I've got fond memories of that. And then in tests, the last time that Bangladesh beat Australia was back in 17, back in Dhaka as well. So it really doesn't happen very often. Just really interested in kind of hearing your views in terms of the series overall. How do you think it obviously, it didn't go very well for Australia, but kind of what's the reaction been back home?
Well, the funny thing was that regardless of whether Australia played brilliantly or poorly, it was always going to be, sadly, probably the least known Australian series in living memory. But by performing so badly in the last game, the Australians actually managed to somehow give it a little bit of publicity. We were so bad that it actually is being talked about finally after game five. But that the reason that it so went under the radar is kind of cricket in this country is a very big sport, but particularly in the summertime. And once you move out of the summer, we've got rugby league in half the country, Australian rules football in the other half of the country. They just absolutely dominate. And really only an Ashes series or a tour of India or a World Cup can kind of raise cricket above the parapet. And so it's also always in a battle for survival. That's the wrong. It's flourishing, but dollars are scarce. And there's so many sporting leagues and teams in a relatively small country that it's always kind of brutal. And so as far as cricket administrators are concerned in Australia, Bangladesh hasn't evolved from where they were seen 25 years ago, which is ridiculous because cricket fans know that that's no longer the case. But sadly, the average Aussie probably did think up until this week, oh, Bangladesh, you're a bit of a minnow, which as a cricket fan, I certainly didn't think that. I gave Bangladesh every chance of winning this series. But so when it came down to it, the game started at 10 o'clock at night on the East Coast. There was a lot of uncertainty about the series in the lead up. Foxtel, who would normally broadcast it, must have just looked at it and thought, the Olympic Games are on. The Olympic Games in Australia are the biggest thing. They're bigger than any other country. We're an island nation a long way from anywhere else. We love to do well on the world stage, and most of the time, most countries ignore us. And so when we are at the Olympics, we think it's the greatest thing ever. So the Olympics is just wall to wall to wall. The rest of the time was just COVID and our football codes. And so Foxtel made the decision, well, we're not going to shell out money to broadcast games that start at 10 o'clock at night in the big cities of Sydney and Melbourne. Add it all up, first series not on TV since 1994. And until game five, other than diehard cricket fans, I would say probably 95% of the population didn't know the series was on. But as I said, by getting thrashed so resoundingly, so historically, it now is starting to get a bit of attention and everyone's going, wow, that's really bad.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was just a real shame that it has kind of gone under the radar, or at least until the last game, as you've kind of said, because as you were kind of alluding to, Bangladesh and Australia, they don't really play one another very often at all, certainly not in sort of bilateral series. You know, they might meet in the odd sort of World Cup kind of group stages. But so, yeah, from that point of view, I thought it was, you know, a real shame that it has gone under the radar. I think, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think the well, in terms of the TV sort of broadcasting side of it, I think, yeah, there could have been, or there should have been really more effort, both, I think, from the BCB and indeed from Cricket Australia to maybe make sure that a deal was struck so that it could be visible in Australia, which I think would have actually benefited Bangladesh cricket as well in terms of, you know, a brand and its kind of marketability and its visibility. And I know we were actually saying off air just at the start there that I can feel that pain as an Australian, if you're an Australian cricket fan wanting to see Australia play in Bangladesh, because if you're a Bangladesh fan who lives outside of Bangladesh, a lot of the time it is very difficult to try to kind of find a stream, whether it be legal or illegal, to actually watch the team play. So yeah, I could certainly sort of share that pain and frustration.
Yeah, it's funny that the stream I ended up watching was via a betting company who I won't publicize. I had to create an account with them. And the company itself didn't know that they were televising it. That's how strange it was that their Twitter handle was sending out tweets like, if Australia loses the game but it's not televised, did it really happen? And I felt saying, you're televising, it's shown live on your stream. But the one good thing that happened was, not that, no criticism of the Bangladesh commentary, but like all cricket fans, there are some of the times I just love to be able to mute the commentators. And the stream that I got had all of the ambient noise of the actual game, but none of the commentary. So it was a bizarre experience, talking about the incidents of, you know, Mitch Marsh getting into a bit of a confrontation with some of the Bangladeshi players. I missed the commentary and I was watching that thinking, what's going on here? I can't work out why is he angry? What's going on? And then it kind of got lost in the ether. So it was a strange experience watching it just with the ambient noise. It was good and bad.
I'm sure, there might be an argument for saying actually your viewing pleasure was increased by not listening to the commentary and not having commentary on. I wouldn't be one of those people. I actually know a couple of the commentators who are on, and they're great people if you're watching this. what I wanted to say, actually, it was an interesting point there that you just made about how cricket and Australia can sometimes struggle for kind of exposure and airtime because of, you know, the other sports, like you say, rugby league in particular, outside of the sort of the cricket season. Because kind of going off on a bit of a tangent, I guess, you know, there's something very similar in England, in the UK, in terms of cricket really struggling for exposure. And, you know, really sort of losing the battle a little bit against football or soccer, as you know, you probably know it as, which is why, you know, part of the reason why they've introduced the 100 this summer to try to kind of restore that balance a little bit. I'm not sure if it's working, but, you know, time will tell. But one thing that I just wanted to sort of come back on in terms of Australia losing so badly, and you know, for me, there's always been this sense of, you know, the pride that comes with wearing the baggy green, and, you know, it I don't know if it's an actual thing, but often there seems to be this real big deal of it being, you know, almost a matter of national importance if, you know, Australia do really badly. Obviously, we're talking about white ball cricket. There is no baggy green. I don't know, you'd call it maybe the tight fit canary yellow or something. But yeah, I'm just wondering if there is that sense of, you know, this is really bad. You know, it doesn't matter who we've lost against, but we've lost. We've been bundled out for 62. This is, you know, really unacceptable.
Yeah, to a degree. But I think if it had been a test series, then it would be far more significant. Ultimately, I think when it comes to bilateral white ball series, most fans kind of, whether we win or we lose, we sort of say, well, outside the World Cups, nothing really matters that much. It's still a source of disappointment to lose a series like this, and in the manner that we lost it, and as I said, with so many Australian fans still thinking like it's the late 1990s and that Bangladesh aren't so good, that adds to the pain that some people will be feeling. And so cricket is very successful. It's just that in the winter it kind of dips below, whereas in the summer, I get the sense of the UK that even in the summer you look at the Day of the Lord's Test match and the back page of the paper would be about transfers or something rather than the actual cricket. That's not the case here. In the summer, the cricket really does dominate. And the other thing that really helps the cricket is that the football codes are split halfway through the country. So half the country obsesses over rugby league and the other half utterly obsesses over Australian rules football. So if you want to have an ad that appeals to the nation, you get a cricketer because that's the one that kind of it's kind of the second biggest city in the second biggest sport in every city. And so that's where and because it's an international game and the long history of rivalry with England, that really gives it a sense of national importance. You only look at the ball tampering scandal when, you know, 2 days after it happened, the Prime Minister was talking about it. I'm not sure if that would have happened in other countries. It might have, but or certainly would have happened maybe in India, but might not have happened so much in England. So it is a massive game. It's just that in the middle of winter, these bilateral white ball series are regarded as not so important. And this one, for those reasons I said before, was focused on even less. But for those who did pay attention, yeah, there's a great deal of disappointment in losing a series.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say there. I mean, in the UK, we do have a very opportunistic Prime Minister, unfortunately, who does actually get involved in all manner of ridiculous kind of debates and arguments that he has no place to. But just moving on from that, I guess, yeah, the reaction in Bangladesh has, you know, been very different, I would say, in the, you know, this is a huge deal, beating Australia in a series, like I say, never been done before, is a huge thing, particularly as you know, they are seen as, rightly so, one of the kind of superpowers of world cricket, if you like, amongst, you know, within that big three. So it really is a huge deal, I would say, within Bangladesh. And I'd actually say one other reason why it is a big deal, and interesting to see if you get a sense of this, is that actually Australian cricket and Australian cricket, you know, particularly is held in real high regard in Bangladesh. I don't know if you get a sense of this. I would say particularly because when the sort of collective cricket consciousness of Bangladesh was developing around the sort of 80s, the 90s, you know, the you know, champion team of that time in world cricket was indeed Australia. So it's interesting when I talk to my cousins who sort of still live in Bangladesh, a lot of them, you know, revere people like the War Brothers, you know, Glenn McGrath, Shane Warne, you know, they are absolutely, you know, figures that are almost untouchable within, you know, the cricket world. So I'd say also for those reasons that, you know, the fact that now Bangladesh have beaten such a sort of revered cricket team, it's of huge importance.
Yeah, I had a Bangladeshi on Twitter asking me if I could get Justin Langer sacked. And saying, you know, he supported Australia passionately since 2004, and this is the worst thing. And I looked, and I thought, this guy lives in Bangladesh. That's surprising. But we had the same thing in Australia with the West Indies. So of the 1980s, that West Indian dominant era, my friends are kind of, and me are kind of at the end of that period. But there are plenty of Australians who are now in their 40s and 50s who look back on the 1980s with nostalgia. And if you ask them, who are your favourite ever cricketers? It's Viv Richards, Joel Garner, Malcolm Marshall, Clive Lloyd, that sort of era. So I can sort of, I'm sure there's a parallel there that the team that was dominant that when you first got into the game, you always have a love for.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, yeah, I'd say it's a similar case in, you know, those of us who grew up in the UK or in England sort of through the 80s, 90s, yeah, really taking to those West Indies teams, yeah. That were so fun to watch, I guess.
Definitely.
But let's just kind of look at the games in a bit more detail, I guess. Just, yeah, worth doing, I think, a very quick overview of each of the games. They a lot of them actually followed a similar pattern whereby I think Bangladesh worked out that the successful blueprint for victory really was batting first. If you won the toss, bat first, put on around about the sort of 120, 30 run total, and then, you know, try and bowl out Australia or restrict them, which is kind of exactly what they did more often than not. So in that first game, Bangladesh batted first. They were actually put in because Australia won the toss.
I remember that. I couldn't believe it when they did that.
Yeah, they got to that, again, that sort of decent-ish challenging total in the context of things of 131 for seven, and then Australia being bundled out for 108. And I remember at the time thinking, wow, 108, that is a super low score to be bowled out for in a T20. and that was actually off the very last ball, I remember they were bowled out. But then little did I know that, you know, a week later that would be
we're dreaming of scores like that.
That would be blown out of the water, exactly. The second game was a bit different, i.e. Australia batted first. They got to 121 for seven off their 20 overs, and then Bangladesh managed to chase it down, winning by 5 wickets, 8 balls to spare. One of the performances there for Bangladesh were, in terms of a notable performances, was from the young batsman Afif Hussain, who kind of got them over the line with an unbeaten 30-odd. The third game, I thought, was actually the most kind of action-packed, if you like. Again, Bangladesh batting first, getting to that sort of 127 for nine mark. In the end, Australia were restricted. They weren't bowled out, but they were restricted to 117 just for the loss of 4 wickets. I think it's it's probably worth kind of touching on this game a little bit, because I felt there was just so much going on in it. There was the Nathan Ellis hat trick. He got 3 wickets off the very last 3 balls of Bangladesh's innings. And then in reply, there was lots going on in that sort of batting innings for Australia. Again, I think it was a familiar case of Australian batsmen not coming to terms with that sort of sticky wicket, I would say. More than it did take turn, but I think from my point of view, interesting to hear your views on this, Paul. I thought that actually the stickiness of the wicket was the thing that kind of led to a lot of the Australian batters' downfall more than anything. But it was quite clear that, you know, it wasn't a wicket that you could sort of score quick runs on in that reply. And really, it was only Mitch Marsh, who was the only batsman who showed that sort of application, as well as, the adaptability of kind of getting used to how that wicket played. And I always felt actually watching it that if he'd got out, then they would be in sort of all sorts of problem. And that's exactly what happened. Shoaib Islam ended up getting his wicket, which was, a big moment as well, because they'd had this confrontation. A few words were exchanged, I think a few overs beforehand. And actually, from a Bangladesh point of view, it was actually quite good to see. I think Bangladesh cricketers not really known for their kind of overt aggression and kind of positive body language, if you like. So in some ways, it was good that, someone like a young fast bowler like Shoaib Islam was prepared to kind of face up and front up to the Aussies. Obviously, we don't like to see things spilling over, but I thought, it was a good sort of contest there that was going on. What were your views on that?
Well, as I said, I was puzzled because I didn't have the commentary, and also because Mitch Marsh is kind of regarded as the most mild-mannered of all of the Australian players, that he's a little bit of a joke in Australia because every time he succeeds or fails, social media lights up because he's such a polarising figure. He's played a lot of test cricket for a very, very modest record, and there are large groups of Australians who cannot believe that he keeps on getting picked. And I think it was one of the journalists over here, I think it was Robert Craddock, saying that he wrote a piece really hammering him. And then the next day he had to see him, and he thought, oh, he's going to be pretty frosty towards me. And he was like, greeted me warmly and friendly. It was like water off a duck's back. Like, he's genuinely one of the really nice guys. So it was interesting that he was the one getting in a bit of a confrontation. Most Australians love it. I think that he's a little bit less so. That one of the points that sort of allied with that in terms of maybe the difference in approach from Bangladesh, I remember distinctly in the 2016 T20 World Cup, correct me if I've got the facts wrong here, Didn't Bangladesh get right to the wire against India in, was it a quarter final or a semi final? And they lost by a run out off the last ball. And I remember this distinctly because I'd actually had a little bit of money on Bangladesh, that they got run out by about 2 inches and he didn't dive. He hadn't even stretched out fully. And I thought, an Australian or an Englishman or an Indian wouldn't have got run out then. I think that's a big change in Bangladesh cricket. I think that that same game now, he'd make it. He'd make his ground because I was blown away by the standard of the fielding throughout. Like they looked every bit a top-tier side as far as the fielding is concerned, which makes me think, obviously it's difficult because they've got to go through the sort of the preliminary phase in the World Cup, but a few things go their way. Wouldn't it all be beyond the realms of possibility for them to go deep into the tournament, I think?
Yeah, it's interesting what you say. Well, I think being a Bangladesh fan, they've got a history of sort of losing very close contests with Australia. Sorry, with India,
right.
In the last few over. Sorry, the last few balls of matches. So yeah, that's certainly not an unfamiliar thing. And yeah, in terms of maybe the sort of the change in mindset and the change in outlook, I think partly the under 19 team winning the World Cup last year, they beat India in the final in that competition played in South Africa. Yep. I think that was quite a big watershed moment actually for Bangladesh cricket. So actually Shorafal Islam was one of the members of that World Cup winning side. And indeed there's a few, one or two others who are actually being incorporated into the senior side who are kind of emerging now from that World Cup winning team. So I think there's certainly been a bit of a subtle shift in kind of mindset. And I think, you know, the exciting thing is from a Bangladesh point of view at the moment is that there's this real kind of quite nice blend of established kind of senior pros, so people like the captain Mahmudullah, who's been around for a long time. Shakib obviously has been around a very long time and is you know an absolute champion player for Bangladesh. And then you know you've got the likes of Tamim Iqbal as well, who missed the series, and indeed Mushfiqur Rahim as well, who missed the series. So
combining Australia's insistence.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, that's an interesting point, wasn't it? He kind of had it. Yeah, it's an interesting story. So he left the Zimbabwe tour early. So Bangladesh were in Zimbabwe prior to the series. He left Zimbabwe because principally, I think, because both his parents had COVID. So he left to go home. And then, yeah, he wasn't allowed to re-enter the bubble because of I think the story is, even though he had like the 10-day or whatever the insistence is in terms of the quarantine period in terms of before going into an actual game, even though there was that time frame earmarked, I think basically because he left the bubble completely, Cricket Australia didn't want him to go back into it, as it were.
We displayed the behaviour that, if India displayed that towards us, we'd say, oh, typical BCCI, do whatever they want. And, you know, and when we get the opportunity to do it, I'm sure we had our good reasons, but it was, there must be some sense of satisfaction among Bangladesh fans as well, that not only is Australia a strong cricketing nation, but to have beaten them when they've treated Bangladesh pretty shabbily over the years must give it an extra sense of pleasure. I think Shakib Al-Hassan even hinted at that, there's an extra degree of satisfaction as a result of that as well, I would expect.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that.
And fair enough too.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But what I would say is that I wouldn't sort of single Australia out as you know, the cricketing nation who's been the worst at dealing with Bangladesh in terms of not playing them, basically. I think England and indeed India as well, I think have been as culpable over the past sort of few months and years. In fact, it's quite interesting that England have postponed their white ball tour of Bangladesh, which was due to take place in sort of September, October time, just a week or two ago. I think that's a whole different topic. I could talk about it for hours, but for me, it was a real well, to call it a shabby decision is kind of an understatement. It appears
was it because of the IPL, wasn't it?
Basically, yeah, the BCCI, I think, would like as many English players to play in the IPL, the window that they've managed to get hold of just before the World Cup. So to make sure that that happens, obviously, they can't be playing for England against Bangladesh. So, yeah, I mean, I just think it's a terrible sort of, not only a terrible decision for a whole host of reasons, but it's just a terrible shame in terms of, you know, cricket in general. Do you want to grow the game? Do you want to expand? Do you want to see sort of new exciting players and teams emerge, or do you want to just sort of shrink it as much as possible and just play amongst the same sort of established people? But as I say, I think that's just a whole different topic which I could talk for hours, but I won't. So yeah, just going back to that third T20 then, I think, yeah, after that wicket of Mitch Marsh went down, I think even at that point, you know, Australia were not in a bad position. They still had sort of six wickets in hand. I think they had about 30 odd to get. I'm not totally sure about how many overs they had, but I know they had about 30 odd to get. You know, it certainly wasn't a case of them having to sort of chase sort of 12 runs and over at that point. But really the turning point, I think, in Australia's chase was the penultimate over, when Mr. Fazour again had the likes of Carey and Dan Christian as well in all sorts of trouble, bowling all his variations. In fact, I think for me, what was more impressive, you know, we know that the Fizz is the best at bowling those off cutters at ridiculous pace, but what I really enjoyed in that over, he was actually bowling really full wide Yorkers, which were as difficult to kind of get away for both batsmen. So yeah, I think that really kind of put the final nail in the coffin. I think they had after that over about 25 or 26 to get off that last over, which they weren't able to do.
No, it just sort of slipped away from them. That they it felt comfortable. I think they've set some records just in terms of the lowest totals or near the lowest total ever scored for a side only four wickets down at the end of a T20 game, or somewhere in that, up near the record. I think that informed what they then did in the fourth game of sending Dan Christian in at number three, it was a pity to have players in the shed who could have had a free swing. So maybe what they should have done was, when that wicket fell, rather than send out Enriquez or whoever it was to play normally, send in a few others to say, just absolutely try and hit every ball for six, and if you get out, so be it. But we need to have a little bit of a surge to try to get this run rate back under control, because it was the sort of pitch that once you're trying to score more than five or six and over, it was very, very difficult.
Indeed, yeah. So, yeah, moving on then, you touched on that fourth T20 game there. So that was the one that Australia won. Yeah, they managed to bundle out Bangladesh, who were batting first. They didn't bundle them out, but they only managed to score 104 for 9 off their 20 overs. And actually, in reply, Australia almost didn't get there. They only got to the target of 105 with three wickets remaining. They had six balls left. But I think that would have been an amazing story if they hadn't quite got over the line there. But as it happened, that was a solitary game that they won in the series. And then moving on, as we said, to that last game, Bangladesh again sort of batting first, putting on 122 for 8 in their innings. And then Australia bundled out. Not that I take a lot of pleasure in saying this, but I just think it's just remarkable. Bundled out for 62 runs in 13.4 overs. It was all over social media shortly afterwards that is the shortest innings in terms of number of balls that Australia have ever played in any format of the game. So it's a quite a historic occasion for that stat alone. But there were so many stats that, that kind of emerged from that game as well, 62 being the lowest T20 score that, that Australia have made as well. So, yeah, all in all, a thoroughly convincing win, I would say, for Bangladesh. But from, you know, from an Australian point of view, if you had to pinpoint one or two things that that did go wrong, you know, what would they be?
Oh, it's just that we can't play spin on spinning wickets, and we've always struggled to do so, with the possible exception around about 2016-17, when Australia really wanted to beat India, and they had that tour over in India where Australia spent about 3 or 4 weeks beforehand at the Dubai Centre of Excellence playing on pitches that were tailor-made to handling the series in India. They ended up winning the first test and ended up losing the series, but they acquitted themselves really, really well. They kind of parked the car at that point because they looked ahead and thought, our next tour of India is not for a long, long way away. And the ashes of 2019 loomed so large. We then started having Duke's balls in the Sheffield Shield, and the whole thing was, you know, we cannot handle steaming conditions under grey leaden skies that we're going to face in England. We have to do something about that. And our other problem of that we can't handle spin in spinning conditions was kind of put on the back burner. So if anything positive can come out of this series, and I think some positives will come out for Australia, one of them must surely be looking ahead to 2022, and we have got a raft of tours to the subcontinent and the 2023 World Cup of 50-over cricket, and, of course, this upcoming T20 World Cup, which there's not much we can do about that now. But I think that we need to say right now, now's the time to try once more to get our players better equipped at handling spin bowling. Mitch Marsh was the one that did really show that he could do it. I don't think it's an effort thing. I think that the effort is there. I just think it's a lack of ability and a lack of technique. Some players have it, some players don't. Ricky Ponting's first tour to India was terrible. He worked really hard on it, and ever since after that, he never dominated over there, but he's if you take out that first tour, his record in India was quite good. We need to do, you know, we're our own worst enemies. If we'd had, as we should have had, multiple series against countries like Bangladesh in Bangladesh, rather than just that one series, it was at 2017, and the one before that was the one before that 2006. Is that the only ones? In any case, if we'd had a few more series over there, we'd have players who were better equipped. If we'd had a few more A tours over there, and I think that on the other side of the coin, our spinners bowled well, and they bowled better than well, but they weren't devastating. Like there was like Shakib Al Hasan was in this last game. There were no times when we had figures that were just off the charts good. We're sort of 4 overs, 2 for 24, decent sort of figures, but not devastating, which reflects as well on the fact that our spinners, Zampa, Agar, Swepson, good bowlers, but they're not bowlers that set fear into your heart. To look at someone like Rashid Khan and say, well, there's 4 overs that we're, you know, we better just avoid a collapse on. I don't think sides feel that way when they look at the Australian bowlers. They're very decent bowlers and they could have good performances at the World Cup, but they're not absolute top of the tree.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think in terms of Australia's kind of preparation for the series, well, not preparation as such, but I guess, you know, from the outside looking in, to play in Bangladesh, it's kind of a bit of a given that you're going to be playing on sort of low, slow turners. So I was a bit surprised, I guess, that the batsmen, okay, maybe in the first couple of games would have found it difficult to kind of adjust and adapt to that kind of wicket. But I did find it quite surprising that, you know, that they were still having those problems kind of 4 or 5 matches in. So I don't know if that's a case of, you know, some of the preparation sort of going into it maybe not being as thorough as it could have been.
Well, I think it was just that it was a series that was all but being cancelled at all times. And when it ultimately did happen, I mean, they had decent preparation in that they had low, slow turning pitches in the West Indies. I just think it's conditions that were so different to what they're used to that even those five matches weren't enough for them to get a handle on it. And some of the dismissals in the final game, that the ball was short of a length, their eyes light up, I'll expose my stumps and play a back foot shot, cross bat shot to this. And before they'd even got the bat halfway down, the ball was shot through and hit the stumps. Those are things I don't think any player used to and good with spinning conditions would play. Maybe if Australia had had 15 days, you know, on these sorts of pitches in the lead up to it, maybe they also would have got over that hump. But that's, unless you do it, you're not going to get there. So as I said, hopefully this motivates us to say, you know, we've got to do better.
Absolutely. And hopefully, I think you were touching on it as well. Hopefully this will lead to maybe Cricket Australia sitting up and taking notice and saying, actually, maybe we should play Bangladesh a bit more, not only in Bangladesh, but in Australia as well, I would hope, in that, you know, actually playing these guys is good preparation in itself for other sort of tours and tournaments, as well as being a good contest in itself.
Absolutely. And Australia, I mean, I can understand why, but I think that every time India tours, Cricket Australia makes a fortune. When England tours, they make a fair bit. And every other side that tours, they lose money quite a lot. So they actually have a four-year accountancy cycle. I don't think any other company in the world does this. But otherwise, if you just did it every year, you would, like, this company's going crazy. And so they have a four-year cycle. So it's a lot to say we want to invite Bangladesh down in the Australian summer and play a proper series against them. The broadcasters won't like it, et cetera, et cetera. But if you do it and do it properly and don't just throw them into the whacker on day one and do the inverse of what kind of happened to us, in which case they'd get thrashed and it would be in no one's interest. But if you give them four or five, I mean, that sounds naive, it's not going to happen, but enough warm-up games, maybe play them in Sydney and pitches that aren't so bouncy, give them a chance and build a rivalry. You'll find that in 10, 15 years, you know, we have suddenly another, you know, Bangladesh is a massive nation. It's much bigger than Australia. I'm sure in 20 or 30 or 50 years, it'll be a more significant cricket country than we are, quite probably. We should get on the front foot and foster this relationship rather than treating the country so shabbily. So if anything this series can do, hopefully it will make Australian administrators wake up and say, actually, this is a country that we should try to have closer cricketing relations with because they actually can play the game a bit.
Absolutely, yeah. Totally agree with all of that. And yeah, certainly as a Bangladesh fan, live in hope of Bangladesh being a dominant force in sort of 20, 30 years' time. I think, you know, if I'm being honest with myself, I think there's quite a lot of sort of structural issues around Bangladesh cricket in Bangladesh that might kind of stop that from happening. But, you know, let's hope that that does happen. And I think, you know, in terms of, yeah, creating a, you know, fostering a relationship between the two countries, I think that there's definitely sort of scope for doing that in terms of A-team tours, in terms of sort of age level under 19 kind of tours and that kind of thing. And I think that's definitely something that should be and could be explored further. So moving on then, let's kind of roll the dice forward to kind of the T20 World Cup, which is most certainly on the horizon now. How do you think both teams will kind of fare in that competition, just kind of judging on what we've seen over the last sort of week or so?
Well, if you ask a lot of Australian fans right now, I mean, the co-host of the Cricket Unfiltered podcast that I do, Andrew Mensel, he's like, almost at the point where we shouldn't even turn up. We're that useless. And just let's focus on the Ashes. But I think that, you know, it's stating the obvious, but when you bring in Maxwell and hopefully Smith and Warner and Cummins and others back into the side, then they once again do look a very decent side. I hope they give Dan Christian a chance. It's going to be 50-50 as to whether they do so. Once all that happens, and if the pitches in the UAE are kind of a bit more similar to what we encountered in St. Lucia, which I think they probably will be, although the fact that they're going to have a lot of games on them might make them a bit lower and slower, I think it's absolutely conceivable that Australia could do really well. But I would put them, you know, I think England and India deserve to be the two sides that are sort of most favoured. then you look at them, there's a glut of sides that on their day could beat anyone. And West Indies, you know, on their day could be absolutely superb, yet they lost to South Africa, who for once in a way are going into a tournament not very favoured. I think that as long as Bangladesh don't have any hiccups, and I'm sure they shouldn't, they should get through the Oman part of the tournament really well. There's no reason they shouldn't be in that same mix, as that on their day they can beat anyone. It's going to be difficult for them to beat India and England, but that's the same as I'd say for any other country. So, if I was predicting it, I'm predicting, I suppose, an England-India final. But when I see odds at the moment, I saw the odds the other day of 100-1 about Bangladesh winning the World Cup. I think that's over the odds. So those odds don't exist anymore, but it was only a few days ago, 100-1. That's quite remarkable. And Australia has been slowly drifting from, they're still just third favourite, but they're now sort of 8 or 9 to 1. I probably think they're even a little bit of a better chance than that. So I think Bangladesh have every chance of doing well, and I'm one of the few Australians who's, you know, relatively still optimistic about how we might go.
Yeah, I'd certainly put a couple of pounds on that 100 to 1 odds, yeah. Odds if they're still there. It's interesting for me because actually T20 cricket has traditionally been like the weakest format for Bangladesh. I think 50 over cricket in general has been their most sort of successful format of the game, and then probably followed by tests, although, you know, their sort of test record in the last year or two has not been very good at all, followed then by sort of T20 cricket. What I would say is that, you know, what this series kind of proves or kind of confirms is almost what we already know, i.e. that Bangladesh are very, very difficult to beat at home, regardless of what the format is. I think the challenge and the test for Bangladesh going forward is that, playing on these pitches all the time at home, whether or not that actually becomes a handicap for them, because obviously, you know, when you even in the UAE, the pitches are going to be different. How more different they will be is maybe a bit of a moot point, but they will be different. I think really the test and challenge is for Bangladesh, as it actually has been for, you know, a little while now, is okay, great, you've almost turned Dhaka into a bit of a fortress in terms of whatever sort of format of the game. You know, they've drawn test series with Australia and England as well in the past few years. So, you know, we know that is the case, but really the challenge is to kind of replicate that away from home, being able to sort of play on, you know, the more sort of sporting wickets. So they completed a white ball tour of New Zealand, I think it was about 3 or 4 months ago now, and basically lost every single game on that white ball tour, 3 T20s and 3 ODIs. So really for me, I think the bigger learning experience for them will be sort of going on more tours of that kind.
Yeah, I think we've got the same, each country's had the same problem. That's where there's some real opportunities there, that Perth and Dhaka could be the two opposite ends of the spectrum as far as the pitches are concerned. So let's take advantage of it. We should be having as many Australians playing as much games of cricket, as you said, at age level and at under A-team levels in Bangladesh. And we should reciprocate and invite plenty of Bangladesh players to come out and play on the fastest, bounciest wickets in the world in Perth, and both sides would benefit from it.
Absolutely. I like this. This is kind of a cricketing utopia that I'm kind of envisioning, with where everyone, regardless of, you know, which country they play for, can kind of experience the best or the worst kind of conditions
exactly
that are out there. Paul, let's wrap it up there. I mean, it's been a fascinating conversation. I've kind of enjoyed talking about not only this series, but all things to do with world cricket in general, which we've touched on quite a lot, and in particular some fascinating insights into cricket in Australia as well. So Paul, thank you so much for coming on. I'm hopeful that maybe at some point in the future we can have another conversation when Bangladesh and Australia hopefully play again.
Yeah, hopefully it's not too long away. That'd be great. Really enjoyed it, Tohid. Nice to talk to you.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, everyone, for watching. Let's wrap it up there. Until the next time, see you. Great. Thanks, Paul.